Children are a blessing from God, but when parents reject and ignore His wisdom and teaching about parenting, children can grow up to be a curse to their parents and to the world around them. What does the Bible say about parents and children, education, and child discipline? Pastor Bob Enyart covers this powerful and critical topic in his teaching series, Raising Godly Children. Order by calling 800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com.
Stupid Megyn Kelly. She's on Fox, right? Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, in a little bit, we'll get to Fox News, and they said humans used to have tails.
Used to have tails, okay.
We'll get to that. And also, one of Denver's leading veterinarians, you had your pet operated by Dr. Ed Umlauf. We'll talk about him and the Max Fund and some real fascinating topics. But could we start with the Answers magazine, the current edition from Answers in Genesis? Fred, this is such a great issue. And there's a story in here about a worldwide global marine extinction that is so interesting.
It's the mother of all extinction events.
That's right.
That's what the science article referred to it as, right?
Yeah. These are secular scientists who say when you go back in the history of the Earth, there was a time when about 90% of marine creatures were wiped out. 90% of the creatures in the ocean were just wiped out. And Fred, of course, this is evidence of the truth of the biblical global flood. We know that, but the atheists who don't believe God's word, they don't understand why. How could all these animals all over? So they come up with their theories, of course.
Yeah, so, and this is another one of those where they're a little surprised about how rapid, how drastic this event actually occurred. In fact, there's really cool data in this. Evidence that falls into our bucket. We've talked about it in a prior show about radioactivity and the amount that would have occurred during the flood.
During the flood.
There would have been a lot of radioactivity.
Right.
But what did they discover in this article? I mean, why are they thinking this thing was rather drastic and
this
rapid?
This is fascinating. An article from Science Daily, as reported in Answers Magazine, talks about scientists from Arizona State University. And Fred, I went there. I studied computer science there. Artificial intelligence. So I always take an extra
look. You're a sun devil.
Yes. No. I always take an extra look at news out of ASU. This is great, where researchers are trying to figure out why was 90% of Earth's marine life eradicated and over what period of time. And you know what they said, Fred? In fact, in this article, previous hypotheses was that over a period of millions of years, the ocean was gradually depleted, blah, 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 over millions of years. Of course, they always say that, right?
Yeah.
Now they're saying, lo and behold, the event that made the ocean extinction occur happened over at most tens of thousands of years. They always have to say that. They don't have it in them to say it in a biblical time frame.
Yeah, like in a couple of days or a month or a year.
Right. If it's at most tens of thousands of years, and they had said it would have taken millions of years, they always say, well, how long would that take? Millions of years.
Yeah.
Well, how long would that little magnesium nodule take to form? Millions of years.
Millions.
Yeah, but they formed on beer cans. Well, the rest of them take millions of years. So they always say millions of years, but now they've come up with a new, very sophisticated technique to try to determine how long it would have taken for this ocean chemistry worldwide to change. And they said at most tens of thousands of years. So, Fred, that's bringing it right down to our list of not so old things.
That's right.
Like Mars turning red. They used to say it would take millions of years. Now they say it probably did happen very rapidly. And here we have, lo and behold, it would not take millions of years, and I bet you, like you're saying, maybe it took days or weeks, at most tens of thousands of years.
Yeah, that's right. It's really cool what they did here. They measured the uranium isotope, right?
Yeah.
And they say in ancient carbonite rocks, of course, the rocks, they want you to think they're millions of years old.
Right.
And they found a large, rapid shift in the chemistry.
So the isotopes between uranium and thorium-uranium, they saw that the ratio changed. And when you look at isotopes, it's sort of like a fingerprint of some chemical environment. So they're saying something happened that preceded or caused the mass marine extinction all over the world that had to do with the change in the radioactivity of the environment of the ocean.
Yeah, they were looking in the section of rock that they equate to this Permian mass extinction. Yeah. So they looked at that chunk of rock, and they found this dramatic change in these isotopes.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, last month we talked about Walt Brown's theory on the origin of Earth's radioactivity, and that during the global flood, which caused the mass extinction of marine and land animals, the mass die-off actually in many species went extinct, during that event, there was dramatic radioactivity. This is confirming evidence.
Here we are 2 weeks later. Yeah. This story comes out. Yeah. And lo and behold, secular scientists are kind of catching up to Real Science Friday.
Yeah,
and they're
right.
They're reporting on rapid radioactive activity that happened really in a short period of time. That's what we've been saying, and it points to a global disaster. Now, are they finding this change just in one part of the world, Bob?
Well, the implication is in their article that this is an ocean-wide phenomenon. And I don't know that they've confirmed their results with specimens from all over the ocean, but they believe they've found a key to the ocean-wide extinction of all these creatures. So they believe this is an ocean-wide phenomenon, which is just great.
Yeah, because they refer to this as occurring across the global ocean.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Hey, you know, well, we've got a theory ourselves. It's not really a theory. We believe it's fact that you read the Bible, and there was a global event, a global disaster,
and
lots of evidence for this radioactivity, and here we have more.
Yeah, very exciting, and the fact that we have billions of dead things laid down by water in rock strata all over the world on the continents, and also the evidence keeps piling up in the ocean.
It does. So, go to your local Home Depot, and you'll find fossils in the gravel.
That's so cool. It's just great. So, Fred, that's one example. And, Fred, for a moment, why don't we jump out of the pages of Answers Magazine and go to a science story reported this month, April 2012, by Reuters. It's reported all over the world. Researchers say something amazing happened just thousands of years ago to the sea level.
Yeah, that it rose, right?
That it rose. And it rose significantly.
Now, this doesn't mean Al Gore was right, does it?
No, this
you know, because I got the Sports Illustrated, and it had the Miami Stadium underwater because of global warming. I canceled my subscription, by the way.
You
buy Sports Illustrated to get liberal propaganda. I was getting it to read about sports.
Yeah, and so did you let them know why you canceled?
Yeah, of course I did.
Good for you, Fred. That's just great. And if anybody's interested in that, just go to petitionproject.org. You'll see 31,000 U.S. scientists have signed this petition, including our friends, saying that there is no man-made global warming crisis.
That's right. So this is not the same thing when we're talking about this rise in sea level.
No, this is thousands of years ago. Researchers have said that sea level rose about 60 feet. And this is also a phenomenal tie-in to the scriptures and to Walt Brown's hydroplate theory of how the global flood occurred and what was the aftermath. Because remember the Bible says something interesting about the earth in the centuries right after the flood. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I think it was that Peleg, the days of Peleg.
Peleg.
So, and he said that the earth divided.
Yeah. And the
what
days,
was up with that?
In the days of Peleg, the earth was divided. And when I was a young Christian, before I studied all this creation science, I wondered, what did that mean? It can't be the breaking up of the continent of Pangaea into subcontinents.
Maybe it was red states versus blue states.
Earth was divided. It just, what was it? And so I thank God for Walt Brown reading In the Beginning by Dr. Walt Brown, MIT. He got his degree in mechanical engineering. And he explains that after the flood, as the Bible says, the mountains rose up out of the waters. The continents literally rose up out of the floodwaters because of the tectonic events that occurred that we've talked about at length. And then in the centuries after the flood, these continents and the mountain ranges gradually sank back into the crust so that ocean levels increased after the flood. They didn't decrease. There'd be nowhere for the water to go.
Yeah.
but the continents settled into the crust, and so the ocean water increased just thousands of years ago. And what that did, Fred, aren't there land bridges that would connect the continents if only ocean water levels had subsided?
Right. That's right.
By less than 100 feet, you'd be able to walk from one continent
from
to another.
Alaska to Siberia.
Yeah, that's one example. And around the globe, there are major archipelagos, major island chains, Southeast Asia and all, where the land bridges appear. So when the Bible says that in the days of Peleg, the earth was divided, that's a historical footnote telling us that no longer could men and animals walk from continent to continent across these island chains. They were peninsulas, now they're islands.
Yeah, gradually the water covered these land bridges.
Yeah, it's exciting to see that scientists are agreeing. They're adding confirmation. Now,
Boy, wouldn't that be pretty bad? You go on a trip, you're on vacation, and you're like, okay, honey, time to head home. Oops, looks like we're living here the rest of our lives.
Right. We better figure out how to build a boat.
Yeah.
So they got their time frame off, but that's expected because nothing could happen in the last 6,000 years. Nothing. Everything had to happen 10,000 to millions or billions of years ago. Even though eventually they say we were wrong on those millions of years, turns out it was only thousands.
Yeah.
Just see our list of not so old things. So, Fred, where do we go next?
Well, is the moon really old?
The moon.
Does the moon exist, Bob? I think it's observational error. I just don't think it exists.
You don't think the moon exists?
No.
Why would you?
Because physics, nothing explains it. How did the moon end up there?
There are all these competing theories about how the moon originated. And what's so interesting, Fred, is if they knew, they wouldn't have popular current competing theories. They'd say, here's how the moon formed.
Yeah.
But every theory has major flaws. That's why there's not the story of how the moon formed. There's all these competing theories.
Yeah, that's why a scientist in Science magazine quipped, just as we said. He said, the best explanation for the moon is observational error. It doesn't exist.
The moon does not exist. Yeah, and he was joking because why is it there and why does it have such a beautiful orbit around the Earth? Just as the Earth's orbit is so close to circular, of course it's elliptical, but it's close to circular around the sun. Otherwise, the Earth would be frigid and this steaming desert throughout most of the year.
Yeah, the moon's at pretty much the right distance for the tides, the oceans, and all that. There's
so many things to give us a beautiful solar eclipse.
Yeah.
It's just perfect. So thank you, God, for creating the way that you did with such loving care and provision for us. One of the theories was that there was a big collision between the Earth and some celestial body.
Like Mars?
Something like Mars, they said. That's one of their theories. Something like Mars crashed into the Earth and ejected an enormous amount of debris.
And some of that debris became the moon.
Yeah, they coalesced and became the moon. That's one of the theories.
A nice, well-shaped moon somehow came out of this collision.
Beautifully shaped in just the right place with a nearly circular orbit. You know, just so stories.
Yeah. So is there something with the titanium ratio on the moon and the Earth?
It turns out that this is another big recent study. And they've said, well, lo and behold, if this were true, the isotopes, now that's a word that a lot of people listening, their eyes glaze over. Isotopes.
They're heading off the road. They're falling asleep. Okay.
Yeah. Isotope.
Wake back up.
It's like, let's say, uranium 2.0, uranium 3.0, plutonium 1.0, plutonium 2.0. It's different versions of some element. So titanium has different versions. Those different versions, when you look at the ratio, like carbon 12, carbon 13, carbon 14. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have about 2.8 million carbon 12 atoms for every one carbon 14 atom, that's like this wildly specific ratio. So you have different versions of different elements, and when you look at them and when they're the same, that's strong evidence that they're coming from the same source.
Okay.
So when they look at the titanium on the moon, they say, you know, it's in the same ratio, its isotopes, as the titanium on Earth. So it is highly unlikely, and these are the atheists, these are the evolutionists, it is highly unlikely that some other Mars-like body slammed into the Earth and the debris made the moon, because if that's the case, we'd have a very different ratio of these titanium isotopes on the moon as we have on the Earth.
So you'd have to have this other object that hits the Earth have the exact same ratio or close to it.
And they're saying, look, that's not the case.
We know that that's not true.
Right.
There goes another theory.
Right. Yeah. Another theory bites the dust. Moon evolution thwarted again. And Fred, this is no different than what they found out with oxygen some years back. They said, look at the oxygen isotopes on the moon. They're the same as the Earth. How did the moon get there? When they don't know how the moon got there, I have a proposition to make.
Okay, let me guess.
Yeah.
Is it Genesis chapter 1?
That God created the heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, and the stars for us, for lights and for seasons. And it's just so awesome what God did. So Fred, when they tell us, when they tell public school students that they have figured out the origin of the universe, they know how stars and galaxies form. They know how solar systems form. They are so overselling this. Their confidence level is in no way deserved whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how the moon got there, and that's the closest thing to us.
Yeah. They're teaching our kids this one story, but yet the scientists are kind of running around. They know a lot of things are not true that's kind of put out in the public.
They don't,
isn't that frustrating?
Right. They don't understand how the gas giants got there, the rocky planets closer into the sun. They can't explain how a single star formed, not one. The standard model of star formation starts with the stars, previous stars having existed, and the current star already forming.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Lots of problems. Big bang. I mean, the quantized redshifts. We've talked all about that.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. It doesn't fit the science. And, you know, a lot of scientists know that, but yet the kids are going to read in their textbooks about the origin of the universe.
And they figured it all out.
They're told stories. They're told basically fairy tales.
The editor of Nature, like the motherlode of evolutionary atheistic dogma in the world, the journal Nature, the editor for years said, we don't even know what came first, stars or galaxies. And that's a glimpse into their actual level of uncertainty and confusion when people who criticize creationists for being ignorant, when they say, oh, it's the Big Bang, oh, it's Darwin, oh, it's a biogenesis, they're just overselling the confidence level because a lot of this stuff is pure guesswork with massive amounts of contrary evidence.
Blind faith.
Yes, I think so. So should we go to Fox News?
Fox News, okay. Are we going to talk about Bernie Goldberg and Sean Hannity and all those guys?
We should, Fred, because Fox News, I often have a bone to pick with Fox News, but in this case, it's a tailbone.
A tailbone to pick.
They have an article on their website. It's still there. We'll link to it from RealScienceFriday.com from today's show summary. And this article says there are 9 useless body parts, and then they go through to name them, Fred, and it's the old canard about vestigial organs and structures.
Yeah, they probably watched Inherit the Wind or some false account of Scopes trial and don't realize this is all a bunch of malarkey.
It is malarkey, and they give 9, and 3 of the ones they give, they say that these are leftovers from evolution.
Yeah.
So they say the tailbone, the appendix, and tonsils.
Did you have your tonsils removed, Bob?
I did. I'm 53 years old, and back then, the doctors had believed the Darwin lie that all these things are not necessary.
Yeah, evolution is bad science, and it leads to bad practices like removing tonsils too early.
Unnecessarily.
Yeah, my parents had theirs removed. I was right at the tail end.
Did you have yours removed?
I was right at the tail end, sorry for the pun, where they started kind of realizing, hey, this has some impact on your immune system. It actually helps with fighting disease in your throat and stuff like that. They stopped removing them so readily. Now it has to really be a serious infection for them to consider it.
Yeah, and they told me, they said, well, if we take out your tonsils, you'll get ice cream and Jell-O.
Yeah.
So I'm like, let's do it.
Sold.
Yeah, but now they realize that they were claiming that the tonsils had no function. They were leftover evolutionary vestiges, and Fox News did not get the memo.
They did not get the memo.
So they list not only the tonsils, but the appendix. And Fred, this cracks me up. They list the tailbone.
Well, yeah, they say it's left over from the olden days when we had tails. The olden days, is that like back when everything was black and white?
Yeah.
The 50s?
Right, when Denver only had Channel 2. Back when cowboys ruled the West. I mean, it is
so
immature, so stupid, and they say it's a useless structure. Fred, Real Science Friday should kick in some money.
Yeah, we could raise some money, right?
Yeah. I'll just ask you for a check.
Okay.
We should offer to pay for Bill O'Reilly or Bill Hemmer or any of those bills.
Or how about Alan Colmes? He's kind of spineless anyways.
Well, Alan Colmes, he's not there anymore, though, right?
Well, he comes on. He's on the O'Reilly Factor like once a week.
All right, all right. We should get one of these Fox guys, maybe Megyn Kelly, and we should offer to pay for surgery to remove their tailbone.
Yeah, I think they'll go for it.
Well, why not?
Might end their trampoline career.
It's a useless it's a useless vestige. You don't want useless parts in your body.
Yeah.
It turns out that your skeleton, the primary function of your skeleton is structure, to provide support
Picture
structure.
Jumping on a trampoline without a tailbone. It's going to be like that Jell-O you got for your tonsils.
Oh, that's
right.
That's
what you're going to look like.
Well, there are muscles that attach to your tailbone that support internal organs. And to say it doesn't have a function, well then, hey, where's an evolutionist that'll let us pay to remove their tailbone? Since it has no function. Just to demonstrate the importance of the truth of their theory.
Yeah. It's kind of like the sickle cell, where they say that's an increase in inflammation.
Yeah,
and
it's
so,
a disease.
So that if you have sickle cell, then you won't get malaria.
Yeah, so do they want their kids?
Yeah, let's inject them, or no, let's splice their genes to give them that genetic defect of sickle cell.
Yeah, they should be happy to have their kids.
Yeah, they say it's an increase of inflammation.
Right.
No, I think I'd rather have a map on how to get out of the malaria-affected area. That move.
Yeah, right, or some DDT.
There, yeah, that's right.
Give me Freon or give me death.
Yeah.
That's what I say. Hey, Fred, also they talked about the appendix.
Yeah, the appendix.
And we now know that after an intestinal infection, which might wipe out the bacteria that we need to survive, most bacteria and the effects of bacteria are supremely beneficial to life.
Yeah, a lot of times people think bacteria, they think infection.
Right.
Most bacteria is good bacteria.
Yeah,
and the appendix is a great home for them. That's their hangout.
Right, it's a reservoir. So if you have an infection that wipes out the bacteria in your intestines, then that can be rapidly replaced by that reservoir of good bacteria in your appendix, because your appendix is off to the side, and the infection, there's a good chance it's going to miss the appendix.
Yeah. And, scientists know that the appendix have a function, but this is another example like we talked about earlier. The front that's given to the public is this totally different story, this fairy tale that this is not a useful function.
Yeah. So Britt Hume, do you think he'll take us up on our offer?
Britt might not, because he's the Christian.
Greta?
I mean, he witnessed to Tiger Woods, remember? He told him, be a Christian, become
Tiger
a Christian,
Woods
and get forgiveness.
Had his moral meltdown.
Yeah.
And that's right. Britt Hume said, Tiger, you're sort of a Buddhist or something. Well, you can't get redemption through Buddhism. Only through Jesus Christ can you get redemption. And wow, go Britt Hume.
Boy, and he got a lot of flack. Do you think he'd have gotten a lot of flack if he'd have said, hey, check out Muhammad?
No.
No, he wouldn't have got the flack, but he's brought up, Christ.
And... yeah, that's right. So maybe Greta Van Susteren will agree to have her tailbone removed.
Maybe a tail comes in handy. We talked about Ed Umloff. So can I tell my little story that happened this last weekend?
Well, is this story true, Fred? This story is so startling.
It is. It startled me, believe me.
You weren't pulling my tail or my leg or anything?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Well, I was heading down I-25 because Dr. Ed Umloff had graciously volunteered to spay my dog. I mean, I wanted to pay him, but
he's a
great
famous
guy, and he's a very well-known veterinarian, Max Fund, right?
Max Fund, which is Denver's big effort to care for dogs that are injured or abandoned. Max was an actual dog 25 years ago that Dr. Ed Umloff operated on, and that's where the Max Fund started. So he's one of Denver's leading veterinarians.
Yeah, and he started out, he's taught all the evolutionist propaganda, and him just operating on animals, he's telling me that, you see this, and it's like, wait a minute, this isn't random chance and selection. This is design. This is so obvious.
It's so
he's so vocal,
right?
He's such a vocal creationist now.
Oh,
absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, so anyway,
he's highly qualified. He's got this great reputation. So he's not afraid at work to tell people?
Oh, not at all. When I was there, he was just proclaiming, the wonders of God's creation. And look how cool this, he witnesses creation. It's awesome. But anyways, so I'm heading down I-25 to have him spay my dog. And, you know, I call him on the phone. I'm like, hey, Ed, I'm going to be about 15 minutes late. And I feel bad. I told him I had an incident. And I felt bad because I'm thinking, okay, he's volunteered to do this for free. And here I am going to be late in the morning. He set the meet at 7:30. So I was really frazzled. And what happened was my window was cracked open maybe a half a foot. It's hard to, you know, show you here on the radio.
You're saying,
I'm motioning my hands.
You're showing about a foot or so.
Maybe.
Yeah, your window was open in your vehicle?
Yeah, and I'm going down I-25 about 60 miles an hour, and my 75-pound year and two-month-old Malamute jumps out the window.
What?
And so I see this dog tumbling down the interstate I-25 near this Boulder Turnpike.
Come on, you're kidding me. Your dog?
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, how do I? So I figured I got to pull over. And I'm thinking, what am I going to tell my daughter? You know, because I'm figuring this dog is not alive.
Aww.
I saw it tumbling, and I saw a bunch of cars back there stopping. I saw a cop, a state patrolman, with his lights on, and he pulls over a car, I thought.
Wow.
And so I'm heading down there. I'm kind of in a daze. You know, you just go,
yeah,
I'm just thinking,
right.
What?
Right.
Did I see what I just saw?
Right.
And so I head over
there. That poor dog.
And there's a guy that pulled over, and my dog, he's holding my dog. And I run across the interstate, dodged traffic. Actually, I waited for ample time, got over there, and it's like, there wasn't a scratch on the dog. I was going at least 55, if not 60.
How could this be?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a miracle. It's not a miracle. It's a freak accident.
It is.
And the dog didn't die.
And Dr. Umloff said, I can't believe your dog doesn't at least have a broken hip or a broken leg.
Yeah.
I don't know how the dog landed on the road, but anyways, the dog was fine.
Wow.
The cop drove me to my car, and I told him, well, this is the first time I've been in the back of a cop car, and hopefully the last time.
Yeah, right.
And he was shocked when he got to my car.
At least we have something in common now.
That's right. I know you have, for very good reasons.
Yeah.
But I think I did the show once, and I said you were on assignment in the Denver local jail for protesting abortion.
Exactly.
But anyways, the cop saw the window, and he's like, I can't believe it got out of that. It's amazing. So anyways.
Well, you know, if an animal's head could get through something quite often.
That's what I'd learned that.
The rest of his body
didn't realize
make
that.
It through.
So, you know, I thought he was just doing the dog happy thing, sticking his head out the window and panting, but he had other ideas.
You had Malamutes before, right?
Yeah, and they love to do this.
They
stick
love
their
to
head out the window.
They love to jump out the window on the
they
highway.
Didn't love to do that. So anyways, we got him spayed, and you know, hey, the tail, maybe that helped my dog get his balance. And you know, hey, maybe we need a tail for balance. Maybe we'll do better jumping on trampolines.
So Dr. Ed Umloff, if we could talk about him for a moment, you're saying that even when he's at work, he has the courage to point out the obvious, that these amazingly designed, engineered creatures that we love so much, that they could not have come about by random mutation and natural selection.
Yeah, so he witnesses to both clients and other veterinarians.
Even his clients. That's
probably floored by him. You know, it sounds like he's pretty blunt about, hey, evolution is, you know, pretty silly. I mean, come on. This is an evolution. This is design. This is so overwhelming evidence of design.
We brought one of our boys to the orthodontist, and he took x-rays, and he said, now see this set of teeth that are coming in below his current juvenile teeth, and those will be his adult teeth as they replace the current ones one by one. And I said, Doc, you think that all evolved? And he said, there's no way. There's just
really?
No way that
cool.
evolved.
Yeah.
That's design. And we've talked about that. There are millions of U.S. medical doctors who are doubting evolution. Because the more we learn, the more we see the brilliance of the creation. And Fred, it's not a reductionist system the way a machine, if you see a typewriter and you start to look at it and you look at it piece by piece, it becomes real obvious what each piece does. But biology is not like that. When you see a creature, the closer in you look, the more baffling it becomes.
Yeah, it just becomes even more complex.
Yeah, and
so
with these
opposite what man makes.
Right, and these emergent properties, like a red blood cell, the simplest cell, its membrane is 200 times more flexible than latex. But it's stronger than steel.
Amazing. And we call it the simplest cell. Very
Isn't
complex.
That awesome? All right, thanks, Fred. Real Science Friday. Check out all our DVDs. You'll love them.
Marriage is the very foundation of human society. But it was God's idea to begin with. What is God's plan for your marriage? How can you know? What can you do to learn and grow with your spouse to honor God in your marriage? Pastor Bob Enyart covers this deeply personal and critically important topic in his teaching series, God's Plan for Marriage. Order by calling 800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com.